Well, hello and welcome to the Leadership Educator Podcast. My name is Dan Jenkins and I'm Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine.
And I am Lauren Bullock, Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University, and we are both excited for this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast with Dagna Hall, Deputy Director at the Nelson A. Rockefeller Center for Public Policy and the Social Sciences at Dartmouth College, and Robin Fry, Program Officer at the Rockefeller Center.
That's right. We're doing an entire season. We're meeting with different leadership educators and volunteers from various different professional associations. And we had planned to release those episodes off without any type of bumps in the road. And then COVID-19 happened and we changed alongside the rest of the world. And so we started adding in some episodes about leadership educators and for leadership educators, of course, about some of the different types of leadership programs that we continue to facilitate amongst all of this change. And so we knew that we could use this platform of our podcast to share some of these conversations that are happening during this major disruption. So Lauren and I brainstormed a bit and put together a list of people that we knew could share some information about some of these transformations that have been occurring. And a couple of weeks ago, I was engaged with the conversation of some individuals across the International Leadership Association working on some work around the guiding questions and some other, evolving standards for leadership education programs. And Son and Robin were sharing some stories about how they had transformed the amazing programs at Dartmouth into some virtual programs. And so I wanted to learn more about that. And I thought this was a great platform for them to be able to share some of that information. And so they're doing both curricular, co-curricular, integrated programs that they have been doing for quite some time. We're going to learn all about those. And they were able to transform those into some virtual and online programs. So I'm so excited to have Son and Robin on with us today. And so, Sana, we'll start with you. Can you please start us off? Share a little bit about the Rockefeller Center, the leadership programs there at Dartmouth, the guiding philosophy. Tell me a little bit about how they started. What types of students they serve, and what has been your role with them?
Wonderful. Thank you, Dan, and thank you so much for inviting me and for inviting Robin. So what can I tell you about the Rockefeller Center? It's just so magical, Dan and Lauren. You know, it was started in 1983, and basically it's the Nelson A. Rockefeller Center for Public Policy and the Social Sciences. And our mission is to educate, inspire, and train public policy leaders. And as we were doing that, we realized, oh my God, it's not just public policy leaders, it's leaders in all fields of endeavor. And so our program really reaches out to undergraduates. And also we have a 4-year complement of offerings for the students, depending on their age, their maturity level, their developmental stage, and their needs. So let me talk to you about our guiding philosophy. For the leadership side, we believe deeply in self-awareness, the ability to work effectively within a team for an organization to achieve societal good. And superimposed with these are all manner of leadership theories that you see in the world around us today. So everything we do intentionally, and we do with the COPE cycle of learning and the learning zone model as our guiding principles to make it as interactive and as fun as possible for the students. It has to be fun, it has to be engaging, it has to be inspiring, and people need to walk out feeling engaged and inspired and willing to change themselves or think about a world beyond them. So I think this is our guiding philosophy, and we do this with an intro to public policy, a stats methods course, and a program called Dartmouth Leadership Attitudes and Behaviors. This is sort of like the beginning for a number of students who start getting inspired about public policy. And so once that happens in their lives, they can go to Washington, D.C. if they're selected for this program. It's highly selective. 26 of them will go through this, up to 26 anyway, will go through this program, and we will end up connecting them to Dartmouth alums. When they return, they follow the stream of curricular and co-curricular offerings. And by the time a student has finished more than three programs, we lovingly call them our Rocky babies. So that is what we call the Rockefeller Center.
I love that.
We have many Rocky babies now. Actually, more than we think is even possible to have, because people get engaged and they get hooked with the program and they come back and they give back as alums.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and so that is so many programs that are so well integrated and evolutional and developmental and just really well sequenced. So how do you manage something like that logistically when you are dealing with a COVID-19 pandemic?
Right. Yeah, I can jump in. Thank you so much, Dan and Lauren, for inviting Asad and I to this podcast. When the students come back from the first year fellows program that Sadhna was referring to, they have a couple options that they can participate in for their sophomore and junior year. When they have a little bit more life experience, a little bit more work experience, they come to my program, is the Management and Leadership Development Program, fondly known as MLDP. And we have been really blessed to have all of our speakers agree to work with us this term. And I remember when I was first doing this and I thought, for sure, somebody's going to drop out. Probably two people are going to drop out. Not everybody's going to want to do this. You know, they're in quarantine. Who knows what's going on? But not only did all nine of our speakers agree, they were excited. They were excited for a new learning opportunity if they've never done anything on Zoom. They were supportive. They said, don't worry, we'll do it. We'll get it. You know, it'll be great. So I've been really blessed to work with these speakers. Also, the staff at the Rockefeller Center, the rest of the staff, I really have to give a shout out to them. They have been so supportive and just keeping the humor in the workplace, sending funny videos or just, you know, jokes. It's really been a pleasure working with this group. So how are we doing it? For MLDP, I had about 10 days to get all the speakers confirmed and everything lined up before we went live. I had a lot of support from my two student assistants, one who's very tech savvy and one who's very, you know, jovial and gregarious. She's the one that's in charge of the participants and the other one helps me with the tech. So we decided to go with Zoom as our main platform. We got all of our speakers lined up and some of them had to change their content when they were a little bit more lecture-based or their content wasn't as relevant when the students are not here on campus. So we know that adults learn when the information is most relevant to them. So if they're not on campus, certain sessions were not as relevant for them, you know, working in their sports teams or their student groups. So we changed a little bit. For our first session, and we've been worried about engagement because we don't have the students face-to-face. You know, we were wondering how this is going to work with everybody being virtual, how engaged are they going to be? So during the first session, we had them all present a 1-minute slide of themselves. And it was the question, we gave them a couple questions. You know, how are you surviving this quarantine? What's bringing you joy? What's bringing you humor? You know, how are you getting through? So they all had a chance to present a little bit about themselves. And so I think that helped with the cohesion. We also had to scale back a little bit. This program attracts about 50 students per term. And I was worried about trying to have a cohesive group with almost 50 people in on a Zoom call. So we encouraged a few of the participants to defer to another term. So we ended up with 27. So I think that's helped. One thing I noticed, and I am not sure if it's because these students aren't on campus and they don't have the distractions of being on campus or if they just really wanted to be here, but they are super committed. We've given them extra work, extra reflection homework for the virtual version, and everybody's done everything on time. They have a coaching session with me. Everyone's shown up to our coaching session without any issues. They're usually there unless they have some tech issues. And yeah, this has just been a really committed group. Still trying to figure out why they're so committed, but
So it's Robin, it's interesting that you say that, because that was going to be my question. So Dan and I have talked a lot about like the logistics and how you have all these options and how you make decisions. And, you know, that was going to be my question. Like why do you think your students are so committed in this space?
Yeah. And I'm still trying to figure that out. And I think it partly is when they're on campus, there's this hustle and bustle, and there's this feeling of do, I got to do as much as I can. Look at what everybody else is doing. I have to be just as productive. And they don't have that. So they're not being pulled in a million different directions. And also many of them, they can't do their other extracurriculars like sports teams or mm-hmm. Greek life. Some of them are still doing their student groups. I think that's a huge part of it. But also when I was asking people if they would rather defer, many of them, even after I reached my cap, they said they really wanted to do this. They really saw the value. So the name recognition for the program is strong. And I think they just thought, you know, I want to stay engaged as much as possible. So, and this was a good way to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, also I've been talking to the students, and I think the seniors are really grieving.
Yeah.
And I think that for them to be connected in any way and every way has been such an important part of what they are doing. And I just noticed that the seniors I've spoken to, they've reached out to me individually, and they've also reached out to each other in cohorts. So I think that's another reason why I think there's good engagement. Mm-hmm. I think there's also some sense of comfort is what they tell me many times when they see that there are similar people going through similar experiences as well. And they derive a lot of joy of by being with each other as well. So I think for them, a couple of them have told me directly that I represent what was normal in their lives. So that's kind of a very sweet thing to say. And I felt very touched when they said that. The other part, which I think is also interesting, is that they can get to deeply reflect, and I'm speaking only for the Rockefeller Leadership Fellows Program, they can really get to deeply reflect about what lies ahead, and the uncertainty of it for many of them has become really real. And so they have really gotten together much closer as a cohort. And then we have another program, which is called the Rockefeller Global Leadership Programs. You know, we have this alphabet soup of programs, you know, MLDP, RGLP, RLF, FYF, which is the first year fellows program. So we have all these programs, and each one of them have a specific focus. So the first year fellows program really prepares students to work in fellowships with Dartmouth alums in Washington, D.C. MLDP really focuses on management and leadership skills and prepares them for internships or even reflect on their life on campus and improve as managers and leaders. The Rockefeller Leadership, well, Global Leadership Program looks at differences across culture. And the Rockefeller Leadership Fellows Program, which is for seniors, really is like a bridge program and looks at what was in the past, what might happen in the future, and prepare themselves and anchor themselves in both ways. So I think that the other reason why the students also are connecting, the students especially in the Rockefeller Global Leadership Fellows Program, have been outstanding. They are so funny and engaged even in these times. And then I think that also structurally, the program, the activities are very, very well conceived, I think, in the Rockefeller Global Leadership Program as an MLDP, which allows them to engage with each other significantly.
Yeah, it's so interesting, the engagement the different levels and areas and spaces of engagement that you talk about. And, you know, you mentioned that many of these students have, you know, because they've basically had to, they've had to forego athletics and other co-curricular responsibilities that they've had because those responsibilities are no longer something that they can engage in because of what they're dealing with. And so it's so interesting that you have been this like rock, this cornerstone for so many of these students, and you're facilitating it so well virtually because of the way that you've structured it, that it becomes the safe space for students to kind of experience and critically reflect on this transition outside of their academic space. You know, otherwise, you know, and, you know, I've been lucky to have been able to facilitate some leadership courses virtually via Zoom. And, you know, I've had them do some breakout work and things like that. Our semester has since just ended, but they really, really appreciated that space. It was still kind of, I mean, it was an academic class, but, you know, I kind of say, hey, we're a leadership class. Like, we're going to do some things that you wouldn't normally do. Like, we're not, you know, from the first day of class, we're rearranging the desks anyway, and we're all going to have an inclusive conversation. But this is, you know, it's extra curricular. It's co-curricular. You're integrating so many different things, and students have this really, really unique opportunity. And there's so many compelling components to the center, to the leadership programs. You talked about self-awareness, there's maturity, there's experiential learning that are fostering, you know, this true growth and development. You're not only transitioning or transforming online, but you're also working with other campus departments. And you, again, you mentioned that your center offers both curricular and co-curricular opportunities. So what were some of the things that you experienced as you transitioned virtually? What were some of the, I guess, similarities and differences of some of the programs that were more, I guess, academic or curricular in nature and those that were more co-curricular in nature? Like, what went into some of the logistics of facilitating those transitions?
Yeah. So I think the first thing you have to begin with is the people who really organize these programs. And so I might embarrass Robin, but honestly, I think it is really the personalities of the program officers who are running the leadership programs. And they have been so much fun and they've been so engaging throughout this process. And they've given, I think, more of themselves than you can even imagine. And so I think that the students automatically are drawn to them. And I think kudos to this team at the Rockefeller Center, which has just done, I think, beyond outstanding job, really. And so I feel touched. I always say this all the time. And, you know, I just love the idea that the curricular and the co-curricular side really try and inform each other. And so the curricular side also has worked pretty closely with us to also show their innovation. So for example, the Rockefeller Leadership Fellows Program for the first time is going to conduct virtual interviews through this program called Kira Talent, right? So the students are going to get this opportunity to interview online so that no matter where they are in the world, they can interview and we can watch the interview, and there's no stress on when they can actually interview. This is why I'm saying the curricular side is the one that informed us that they were doing this for their curricular programming, selective curricular programming. And I recommend this kind of a collaboration across campuses where people are using programs like Kira Talent. Admittedly, this is the first time we are going to do it. But what I think we have to really look at is when students are spread across time zones, how do you make it easy and accessible for them? And I think that we have been able to do that in the curricular side and the co-curricular side. Now, the curricular professors simply tell me that they too are shocked with the engagement of the students. And when they say shocked, in a really good way, you know, so they're excited, they were skeptical, some of them were skeptical, and then now they feel, no, really, this is a possibility. And it's opened opportunities for them as well. And much as you and I love the face-to-face part, maybe we are at a stage where we can also start looking at many different combinations that sort of spark our imaginations in different ways. And maybe some, especially online learning is probably very good for introverts who don't speak up, and maybe, you know, I wouldn't say force, but we connect them in ways that feel comfortable. So I think that there's so many strategies that you can really do. And so, for example, our Global Leadership Program and the Rockefeller Leadership Fellows Program has accountability partners. So we don't have pairs, but we have threes, just in case one person doesn't end up. So again, you're building a very strong base of how the students can communicate about concepts and their personal lives. Because right now, I strongly believe there are three things that we really need to do. We need to be there for the students. We need to work on content. And we have to really look at their mental health. I'm not qualified to speak about mental health, but I do believe that I can use a soothing voice and be a soothing presence or a funny presence. That's what's needed.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
I have something to say about this too.
I love that. What I drew from that was the pandemic is allowing for innovation and inclusion more than ever with this disruption in learning. So with everything kind of turned on its side, we now have the space to ask and lead with questions as well as be open to feedback. I think our students are optimistic and fearful, and I think that's a lot of where that engagement comes from. This generation just naturally is risk averse, and so they're seeing kind of a worst case scenario, and they're looking to, especially college students, they're looking to us to lead them, and they have this hope for better, and they're looking for us to kind of to say, yep, it's okay to have a little hope, it's okay for you to want things to be better, and almost understand that you can be on the bus with us. I know the week that Temple was transitioning, I was in my class and said, you know, I don't know what we're going to do, and I'm a little overwhelmed, and it's okay because we're all on the struggle bus together. Some of y'all are driving, some of y'all are taking tokens. You know, we're in Philadelphia, so there's an urban vibe. So I, you know, and I said, but I felt okay in saying that, and I felt like that was more helpful than me trying to lecture or me trying to, you know, tell them what to expect. That true openness. I think they feed off of it. And Dan and I have talked about how, like, as leadership educators, are we now being held to a higher standard? Because this is what we talk about without the pandemic. Like, we talk about what it looks like to change, things like that. So I actually want to just toss this back to you. How are you making decisions around this? You know, we've talked about a lot of options. You're obviously living your mission and your values. I can hear it in the words that you're sharing. But literally, like, is your staff making decisions to carry students through this?
So how are we making decisions? I think trying to put ourselves in their shoes. So when there's two sessions that we decided to change the content. And one of them was kind of obvious. It was about public speaking and presence when you're presenting to people in front of you. So that speaker switched to an online presence. So focusing on online presence and how it involves emotional intelligence and so on and so forth. And the other session was focused on building professional relationships and having a meeting with people one-on-one and building, you know, a professional relationship using a five-step model. And typically that session is pretty well used when students are on campus and they want to meet with their professors and they want to build relationships with their sports teams or, you know, Greek houses. But now that they don't really see a lot of opportunity to do those things. It's still there. It just seems a little bit more, I think there's more barriers in the way. Maybe more abstract, you know, yeah, I should be building relationships with my professor, but I got to set up a meeting on Zoom. It's harder to reach out to them. You can't just go to office hours. So there's definitely some barriers there. I've been lucky that I get a lot of insight with my coaching sessions with them. And we have something called the Personal Leadership Challenge in the program where they have to identify a current challenge to address and they set goals and they're coached through it. My initial thought was that it was going to be really hard for them to come up with a challenge not being on campus. But I actually found this has really given them a chance to address some of those things about their personalities or things that get in the way when they're working with others, really take the time to reflect and address it. It's kind of giving them the space to do that. I'm not sure if that answers your question about decisions.
But no, what I continue to take away from asking that question is you're listening and you're doing what you feel is best. And I think that's kind of what we're in this space to do. That's what I see.
And so Lauren, I think, you know, to your question directly, I want to talk about management decisions that are affected by this. So there's short-term decisions that you have to make. And so we have programs such as our mini grants program. And the mini grants program basically is all our student assistants who will look at grants and will review grants that other students write and approve them for on-campus activities. So we've had to put that on hold. So that's a decision. It's a painful decision because I think that it's in one way we are training our students to become good managers and understand how you do allocation of resources and why you make decisions the way you do. Similarly, the Model UN program was affected hugely. We had over 500 students registered, 21 from South Korea, and we had to cancel. Imagine the heartbreak of the students who worked throughout to pull this together. But that was a tough decision in which the students as well participated. And clearly we had no choice in it. But I think there are budgetary implications, there are staffing implications, and there's this sadness that, you know, these high school students who were all so hyped to come to campus and work with college level students, that reality is not happening this year. So that was a hard decision to make. And I think moving forward, who knows what happens, but I think when you look at the overall budgets of all colleges and all schools, I have a feeling that we are going to have to make a series of decisions. And I'm praying deeply that they are not heavy decisions to make, you know, and they're simply like reallocating resources here and there, but it's business as usual, we hope, you know.
So true. I'm reflecting on the Model UN is just one of the many things that we had to cancel on our campus. Our University of Southern Maine is the host for that program of high schoolers in Maine, and I even have done strength trainings with the team of student facilitators that run that whole thing. I do that every year with them. It's a great partnership that we have across our departments. And you know, I remember when you said, well, we're not going to be able to do our because I always do like two sequential with like 2 weeks in between strength trainings because I think it's more impactful that way. And you know, Tim Ruback, who runs the program, reached out to me and said, well, I guess we're not doing our second one. You know, he goes, it was awesome, as always, thanks. You know, and so that we had to cancel our collegiate leadership competition across eight different regions in two countries. I mean, those were college students had been working. I mean, and just to think of all the athletic programs and everything, all these huge conferences and events that students have put their blood, sweat, and tears into. Yeah, I agree with you, Asan. I hope that it is that we don't have to make any more of these heavy decisions, that we can, it's almost Machiavellian in some ways. We're doing this all, hopefully we're doing as much as we can all at once. We're canceling everything that we can see in this, you know, short term, 6 months out, you know, and then we're looking as far out as we can. Okay, is something 8 months from now going to be okay? Is something a year from now going to be okay? Mm-hmm. And start to think of contingency plans in ways that we've perhaps never had to. And so it's helpful to go back to, you're talking with students about what are they dealing with now. And I remember maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago having a conversation with my students where I kept trying to bring in a different example other than the pandemic. And no matter how hard I tried, and finally I said, you know what? We're living this, y'all. I'm just going to make it relevant. I can't think of any other examples. Let's talk about COVID-19. So it's the reality. And so being authentic and being true and transparent with them, I think the students really seem to be responding really, really well to what you are doing and to the how authentic you're being with them in this situation.
Yeah, Dan, and you're so right about this, right? And it's like our public programs, because that's another area of work that we do public programs for communities in New Hampshire and Vermont, and also for the Dartmouth community as well. Well, we had the entire schedule for the spring term organized and had to cancel it because we just could not get the speakers online. So again, kudos to the staff who put together what we call Rocky Watch. You should watch it tomorrow, 5 to 6. Nice plug, Wednesday, 9 to 6. Really, honestly, it's great. Because it's a short Zoom program with speakers. But to your point, oh my God, it was impossible to get them to think about some other topics other than COVID. So I think we tried to do this, but it still does come back and circle back to this whole issue. But on an aside, before I forget, Tim Ruback worked for the Rockefeller Center. I don't know
right,
if you
knew. That's right. I forgot about that connection.
So the leadership community is such a small world.
Yep.
It truly is. Truly is. And so it's so lovely to see that, you know, a colleague from Rocky is now working there. So there's a really deep bond, I think, even between educators that starts getting built. And so I strongly believe that in these times, I've seen more colleagues reaching out to me and me reaching out to all colleagues too, which I didn't have time to do, but I have felt the need for programmatic changes. So this is the decision, right? For programmatic changes, uncertainty, I feel, and say, hey, Lauren, can I talk to you for a moment? And what are you doing about this? It just sparks a different conversation altogether. So I'd really recommend educators just reach out to people and reach out to your friends as much as possible.
That's such great advice, especially when we know that at the center of leadership is the relationships you have with others. And so we're going to end on that note. I don't know that you can drop any more mics on us. Y'all have dropped so many on us during this session. So we're going to leave it at that. Call your friends for help. And again, just want to echo, we appreciate y'all being here. We want to thank you for your time, and we want to wish you well as you move Dartmouth and there at the Rockefeller Center through your programs, not only this semester, but through the summer as well as into the fall.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, both of you. Really had fun.
You are welcome.
And that wraps up this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening at home or walking your dog or engaging in another activity where you are practicing social distancing.
We are the gurus of social distance podcasting, as we are separated by 6 states, more than the CDC required 6 feet.
Well, that is what we do. So way to be a leader in that area. So jokes aside, thank you for joining us today. We invite you to follow us on Twitter. I am at @Dr_leadership and Lauren is at @MrsLaurjb. That's Miss Laura JB. We want to encourage you to listen to the full episodes as they are released, as we can only share a fraction of the amazing stories that our guests shared. You can find the episodes wherever podcasts are available, and we also encourage you to rate us 5 stars, as the more you rate us, the easier it is for others to find us.
We'd also like to thank the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. The support was facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, William S. Morris Chair in New Strategy and Management.
That's right. And our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator. And he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. He's also a Guggenheim Fellow, some new news. You can check him out, yeah, at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thank you so much for sharing your musical genius with our audience. And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.com. And we hope you will listen to our next episode wherever you get your podcasts.